Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org, the home of free speech. It's where, well, where free speech comes and, you know, it scratches at the door and John Statenlow opens the door and lets it in and it gives it some food and water and a place to lie down. And a backyard to chase squirrels in. That's what John Statenlow does with free speech. He treats it well. Unlike CNN, which, you know, free speech goes up to CNN and starts sniffing at its heels. CNN just kicks it in the head and shoots it right there. Shoots it and kills it. You know, speaking of CNN and dog metaphors, there is a cartoon out there somewhere, and it's got like CNN, but like the CNN logo is on a dog's body, and the CNN dog goes up to some guy, and the guy's like, "Oh, how cute!" And then the dog says, "The most trusted name in news," and then the person says, "Oh no, it's retarded." Which I thought was really funny when I saw it. But, no, free speech is honored here. Also, go to, you know, what is it? Kosher-tified, that's right. It is the app that, well, helps you keep kosher, helps you keep not kosher, helps you keep not kosher certified, and much, much more. Go to nationalbugle.com. Scroll down a little bit. You'll find the Kosher-tified link on the right-hand side. Click on it. It'll take you to the kosher question, and you can peruse. There's a lot there to look at, and see what you think. Download the app if you have an Android phone. It's only $2.99. Best $2.99 you ever spent. Today's show, I want to lecture. We're going to lecture. I used to be a professor, and I'd sometimes have to go in and lecture for 2 or 3 hours. So I'm going to lecture today about the presidential system, the presidential election system, which is something I did used to lecture about. So I'm drawing on my long experiences with this subject, but applying it to the 2020 election, because I'm getting increasingly alarmed, as everybody is, about what's going on in general, but in particular at the how the 2020 election could play into the Cultural Revolution, or vice versa. Well, actually, I mean, I guess both at the same time. So we are in this Cultural Revolution. I've called it all sorts of things. I called it the mother of all crackdowns before the whole George Floyd stuff started. I was calling it the mother of all crackdowns. I was trying to think of what to call, you know, the lockdowns and everything, because, you know, it's not really a revolution, because a revolution is really, you're getting a new ruling class. The one ruling class is falling and another ruling class takes its place, right? I mean, isn't that what happened in the French Revolution, that the monarchy and their allies were thrown to the side and new elites took their place? Russian Revolution, the monarchy there and the church were thrown to the side, and a Jewish communist took over. That was a revolution. And what about the Iranian Revolution? The Shah, his monarchy was overthrown, and a Islamic Republic took its place. American Revolution, even there, you had a monarchy and a colonial, the, what would you call it? You had a monarchy with, you know, the colonies being under British control, and then after the revolution, you had a, what you would call a native-born elite, so you had transfer of power from people who lived in Britain and to people who were born in America. So you did have this transfer of power. And that's not what's happening here. you're not really getting a transfer of power. I think you're going to get a transfer of resources. Whites have very little power and very little representation in the United States now. Now, there is, well, whites have a certain amount of resources, a certain amount of accumulated wealth over the generations of having compiled it. But in our lifetime, especially in the recent couple of decades, whites having power, whatever power there is, it's not really political power. The political power is in the hands of a Jewish elite. I mean, the fact of the matter is that just simply saying whites are okay is deemed hate speech. That says a whole lot. So we do have certain economic power. We have a certain kind of power, but not really political power. We're excluded from political power. And what this revolution is aimed at, and it's not a revolution, what this phenomenon that's going on right now is aimed at is transferring more, well, I guess it's going after the economic power and the economic resources of whites, and also making sure that whites never recapture the political power that they once had. The Cultural Revolution, the Cultural Revolution is a term that was used by Mao Zedong in the 1960s. You had a communist revolution. There again, the Chinese Revolution, if you want to call it the revolution, it was really a long civil war, but if you want to call it a revolution, you were replacing one class of elites, basically warlords and I guess commercial elites and whatnot, with very different people. So you had a big overturn in the ruling class. And then during those first 15 years or so of the rule by the Chinese Communist Party, and Mao Zedong in particular, there were a lot of mistakes made. A lot of big mistakes were made. And in particular, the Great Leap Forward, which led to famine. And Mao Zedong's power was reined in. He still remained the head of the state, still remained the most important person in China, but he didn't have the same kind. If you're talking about the early 1960s, mid-1960s, he had lost a lot of his prestige, and he was maybe the first among equals, but he wasn't a single-handed dictator to the extent he had been earlier. So he had lost a lot of his power and authority. The Cultural Revolution, he was using his sway over the young people in China to have them attack these power resources and the political support groups of his rivals in the Communist Party in order to claw back absolute political power. So you weren't really getting a change in elites. It was the same elites. It was kind of an internal power struggle within elites. Is that even what we're having today? The Cultural Revolution's a closer analogy, but even that doesn't quite match, because this is more of a crackdown. You are having the elites. Because who's behind this? I mean, you've got the media, and the media is big-time elite in our society. Look at all of the commercial interests, the business interests that have been contributing massively to Black Lives Matter, but also have been cheering everything on and virtue signaling through advertisement, through corporate propaganda. I mean, Amazon and Apple and the biggest corporations in America have been all on board with this. They're announcing that they are going to have more black board members and this and that. Educational institutions, which are a lot more important than people, a lot of people might think, because they are the gateways to careers. It's always been, for decades, you've had an anti-white elite, and they're just cracking down. This is a massive crackdown. Anyway, that's what we're in the midst of. So even revolution isn't the greatest term for it, but we are in the midst of this massive political upheaval, and it's really an attack on white people. Donald Trump emerged as kind of a symbol of white people. At least he's a symbol of white people to the anti-whites. And, I mean, you see that because the narrative in the media, the Zionist media, how many times in the Zionist media do you hear Donald Trump referred to as a racist and a white supremacist? Has he done anything for us? He's done things, some things for us symbolically, and he's had some very, relatively minor successes. I think there has been a decrease in immigration to the United States. Some of that might be because of the what's been going on this year, because who would want to come to the United States now? And the Corona hoax is probably has a lot to do with that. But at any rate, but he's been basically a big disappointment for us. But still, he is viewed as by the anti-white elite, Donald Trump is viewed as very dangerous, and they've been trying to get rid of him. So look at what's been going on since his election. Even before his election, even the primaries were kind of rigged against him. I don't think it was part of any plan. And there were, between the election, general election, in November 2016 and his inauguration in January 2017, all sorts of shenanigans went on. He wound up being inaugurated, but those shenanigans are important to review. We're going to review some of them today because we're facing a rerun and things seem a lot more serious now. A lot of things that seemed, well, I mean, that seemed fantastic, that seemed like completely implausible, are going on now. I mean, a year ago, who would have thought that you would have a shutdown of the economy, where terms like reopening the economy would be a thing? Did anybody a year ago think that they would hear discussions of how do we reopen the economy? When do we do it? When do we reopen? I mean, reopening, that was not part of the vocabulary a year ago. And having all of these riots, I mean, we've had sporadic riots in one city at a time, even before Donald Trump was president, right? You had in Ferguson, Missouri, Ferguson, you had the, what was the guy's name? Something Brown. Not Jimmy Brown, not Larry Brown. You know who I'm talking about. Michael Brown. It was in Ferguson. And in Baltimore, the Freddie Gray in Baltimore. And then somebody in Charlotte. I don't remember what it was all about. But Charlotte, that was after Trump was president, I'm pretty sure. So you had those. But to have nationwide riots and going on for now two months straight, and to have these riots, and to have virtually no rioters prosecuted. Yeah, lots arrested, none prosecuted. Who would have thought? So things have been going on. They've been accelerating. Now we're headed up to an election. Now, what's going on with the election? Again, and a lot of this is getting lost. The Democrats' primary election, the primary election process, it was weird what happened the first couple of months of the year, basically the month of February, because the month of January, Joe Biden was doing horribly. And I guess, actually, I guess the first primary, would that have been the first week of February, or the first caucus, was the Iowa caucus was at the end of January, the beginning of February. I can't even remember now. He came in, fourth place, and then did he come in fifth place in New Hampshire? And he looked like he was toast. And then all of a sudden, at the end of February, he did pretty well in South Carolina. He won South Carolina, one state, basically on the back of black females, black women voting for him. And so he won that. And then, a week or 10 days later, you had the Super Tuesday. And, you know, before Super Tuesday, you had many of his rivals just suddenly drop out, and then after, and clear the way for him. He beat Bernie Sanders in most of the states, and then after Super Tuesday, everybody just dropped out. Bernie Sanders hung around a little bit, but we were still very, very, very early in the process. Then you had the corona lockdown, and the, for all intents and purposes, the rest of the primaries were just, for all intents and purposes, canceled. I mean, they wound up happening. Some of them were postponed. They wound up happening, but there was no competition. They weren't competitive, and everything was just handed to Joe Biden on a platter. That's strange enough. What's stranger? Well, what is stranger is that then he drops out of sight, and he's been out of sight, almost completely out of sight. He stopped campaigning in the middle of March. Here we are at the end of July. So you've got 4.5 months where he's been almost completely unseen. When does that happen? And of course, it's, you know, we know it's because Corn Pop was a bad dude. It's because he was always a gaffe machine, and now he is a gaffe machine with Alzheimer's or whatever. And so it's bizarre, but he's going to be nominated. I said he'd never win a single delegate, but it looks like he's going to be nominated. And he's going to be some sort of weird fill-in placeholder candidate. And he's promised a woman, and it would be racist not to be a black woman. So he's got this short list of, five or six people. I think they're all black. Just about all of them are black. So he's going to have a black woman. And with the exception of Susan Rice, I think they're all pretty much pretty hardcore leftist. I don't know about Susan Rice in terms of the revolution and the wokeness and all that, but she was a dyed-in-the-wool neocon, warmonger. So he's going to have somebody horrible. And then you're going to have an election between Donald Trump, who is a pretty much a known quantity, and this phantom candidate, Joe Biden, who's going to have a black lady who will almost certainly inherit the White House pretty promptly. Okay, we are up at the end of this segment. We're going to come back and we're going to dive into what we might see in the coming 6 months with this election. I'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
The Republic Broadcasting Network, late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore, is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the Red Pill.
Okay, so I tried to set the stage with that last segment. It is November 3rd this year that is Election Day, the first Tuesday after the first Monday. November 3rd is the election day. And, you know, we have a presidential system. We have an elected president. If you think of the 20th century, especially the last half of the 20th century, most so-called electoral democracies, and I'll always say so-called, but because, you know, what's really democratic, but most of these so-called democratic systems did not use they weren't presidential. To the extent they had a president, the president wasn't the ruler. You know, places like Germany has a president. Who's the president of Germany? I don't know. Because the prime minister, Angela Merkel, is the person who is the head of the government. Italy has a president. Israel has a president, but those people aren't very important. They play mostly a ceremonial role, and the prime minister's matter. And so most of the countries that we thought of, you know, in the second half of the 20th century that were electoral democracies, they mostly were not presidential systems. They had prime ministers. Prime ministers are not directly elected by the people. Prime ministers are elected by the parliament. The parliament's elected by the people. So the United States has this system. We think that we are directly electing the president, but we don't. The president is elected by the Electoral College. The electors to the Electoral College nowadays are elected by voters, but they don't have to be. And according to the Constitution, they're just select. They're selected by the states. They're appointed by the states in a manner to be set by state legislatures. That's the Constitution. And the first several presidential elections, a lot of the electors were appointed directly by the state legislatures. Some of the state legislatures passed laws allowing the governor to appoint them, and others passed laws allowing the voters to vote for them. And that third style, having the voters vote for them, is, you know, by the 1820s had taken root in almost all the states. I think South Carolina was a holdout until the Civil War. But most of the states, certainly by the Andrew Jackson's first election, maybe 1824, most of the states had adopted that latter system. There's no reason any state tomorrow could pass a law saying our electors will be appointed by the governor or our electors will be appointed by the state legislature. And that would be completely in line with the Constitution. So we have an indirect system. In fact, I mean, the direct election of a president for a country is only a very recent phenomenon. I guess for the most part, I mean, maybe Venezuela and Argentina were using that kind of system early in the 20th century. France adopted it with Charles de Gaulle in about 1960, but it was still very, very rare to have a legitimately democratically elected, directly elected president. Then South Korea took it up in 1987. Russia took it up. And so it's become more common, but you know, we don't have that system. We don't have a directly elected president. We have the Electoral College, which is, like I say, the way it works now is it's an indirect election. We elect the voters elect the electors, and the electors elect the president. But of course, the state legislatures, at their own discretion, at their own will, could turn around and take that away from the voters and say, no, actually, the state legislator or the legislatures or the governor, we're going to appoint the electors. Or make up some other means, you know. Maybe just let Black Lives Matter appoint the electors. A state legislature could do that. They could say, we're going to let the local chapter of Black Lives Matter appoint the electors. They could do that. But, so, and there's a lot of clamoring in the United States to abolish the Electoral College and establish a, like South Korea or like Russia, a direct election for president. Now, one thing is the franchise, meaning the people who are allowed to vote, the franchise, there's not one standard across states. In some states, convicted felons can vote, in other states they can't. Some states, as a matter of, you know, practical, you know, some states, well, they have different requirements if you're going to vote. Do you have to show your ID? Do you not have to show your ID? And, of course, in many states, foreigners who aren't supposed to vote, but they do vote, and they're, you know, if you're not going to be requiring IDs and whatnot, if you're going to have automatic registration when you get a driver's license, yeah, you're going to get lots of foreigners voting, even illegal aliens. Okay, so we're coming up at the break, but on the other side of the break, we're going to get more into this.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispicos, 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the show. So, we don't have one standard for voters. There is, if we were to have a national popular vote, there would be nothing to stop California from saying, "Okay, we're going to let 16-year-olds vote. We're going to let convicted felons vote. We're going to let inmates vote. We're going to let foreigners vote. We're going to let illegal aliens vote. We're going to let dead people vote. We're going to have voting by mail. We're going to have voting by proxy. We're going to..." They could do all these things and it effectively stuff the ballot box. Do you know why, for a long time, in Major League Baseball, throughout, like, I think the 50s and the 60s, right now, the starting lineup of the All-Star team is voted on by the fans, but in the 50s and the 60s, they didn't do that. Why? Because I think it was the Cincinnati Reds. They just handed out a whole bunch of ballots to everybody, and the Reds fans stuffed the ballot box. So California could do that. New York or Florida, they could stuff the ballot box and just overwhelm the rest of the country. So that all could happen, but it could only happen if we had the direct election. We don't have the direct election. So what do we really have? So what's going to happen? On November 3rd, presumably, unless a lot of laws change between now and then, which isn't going to happen, people are going to go down to their local voting, local precincts, and they're going to cast ballots, thinking they're voting directly for the candidate. In most cases, that's what they're going to think, but actually they're voting for slates of electors. And then they're going to go home and watch the results come in on the TV or the internet or whatever. They're going to expect the results to come in like they usually do. And they're going to expect to see, you know, New Hampshire and Vermont and some of these early states in the East. They'll be called by CNN or by ABC as going for Trump or going for Biden. And then as the polls close in state after state, going across the various time zones, they'll expect to see more states be called one way or another. Now, when they're called, they're called by news organizations. That's not official. And it's based on early precinct returns and, you know, exit polls and some other things. They look at the precincts and they figure, well, in order for Trump to win, you know, Michigan, he's got to get at least 65% of the vote in such and such counties. And if he's only getting 60% of the vote in these counties, there's no way he's going to win the state. So even though only 5% of the votes have been counted, we're calling it for Biden. That type of thing. So who knows exactly what's going to happen, but it's, you could have a situation where on election night, a majority of the electoral votes will have been called one way or another. And, you know, maybe at 2 a.m., ABC or CBS is going to call the election for Bush or for Biden or for Trump. It could happen. Or the other scenario for election night is it could be close. And because we have had a number of close elections in this century. I guess Obama's election against McCain wasn't that close, but we've had pretty close elections this century. So you could have, you could certainly have a situation where they've got, you know, you need 270 electoral votes to get that majority. And you could have a situation where most of the states have been called, and neither Bush nor Biden has 270, and there's, you know, a few states that haven't been called, or maybe one big state, maybe Florida. Remember, Florida 2000 was, they never really called, well, it had been called for Gore, it had been called for Bush, kind of went back and forth, and eventually the final accepted officially certified results gave Bush Florida by a margin of about 500 or 600 votes. Very, very close. So you could have, very easily you could have a situation in which the election is not called by the news media because it's close. You could have that. But also, you know, on election night 2016, you probably remember it. I remember it very well. They called the election for Donald Trump. And it was a big surprise. Most people weren't expecting it. I can't remember which state it was, whether it was Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania. I think Florida had been called pretty early in the evening for Trump. But they called the state and lo and behold, there's Donald Trump, and he wound up with a, you know, healthy majority of the votes. You needed 270. He was, I think, at the end of the night, they showed him at 306. So he had a pretty healthy majority of the electoral votes. But there were shenanigans followed, and the shenanigans that followed for most people, never really threw the election into much question. Most people just looked at it, didn't even look at it. Most people didn't notice the shenanigans that were going on. There were some people who were holding out hope that they were going to be able to prevent Donald Trump from being inaugurated, and they tried a few things, and I want to just discuss those. So, in the hopes of preventing Donald Trump from being president, and maybe even getting Hillary installed, the first things that you heard was the allegations of Russian hacking of the election. So you heard that. And the Green Party's candidate, Jill Stein, she had standing, and she had her own reasons for wanting to do this, which I'm not going to get into, but it had to do with being able to scam millions of dollars from Hillary supporters who thought that Jill Stein might be their way of overturning the election. Jill Stein had standing. She was on the ballot in these three close states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And she demanded a recount. And they were close enough, and she had standing, and she was able to demand a recount. She demanded a recount because of this possibility of Russian hacking of the voting machines. Well, in the end, nothing came of it, although Jill Stein raised $7-8 million for the Greens, which is the kind of money that they never had before. But that got the whole Russia hoax going, or if it didn't get it going in the first place, it got it accelerated. So you had that. Then you had, and this, what are the odds that you're not going to have allegations of election irregularities? You could have it from both sides, because obviously there's going to be a fair amount of mail-in votes that Republicans and Trump voters don't trust. And the Democrats are going to be talking about voter suppression, you know, and they're going to be talking about Vladimir Putin and election hacking and this kind of stuff. So trust in the electoral process is low, and there is very, very likely going to be these allegations made, all sorts of allegations made. Well, what's the next thing that happened in 2016? You had an effort to bribe or cajole, if that's the right word, coerce individual electors not to vote for the person that they were bound to vote for or intended to vote for. And you did have two Republican electors, two, who did not vote for Donald Trump. I think one voted for Ron Paul, and I think one voted for John Kasich. Only two. And, of course, Trump had a margin of 36 electoral votes, so that wasn't a big deal. You had something else very interesting happen with on the Democrat side, and that was you had five Hillary electors who wound up voting for other candidates besides Hillary. Three voted for Colin Powell, and that's very significant. Well, Hillary electors defecting Hillary, that doesn't hurt Trump's margin. It doesn't endanger his majority per se, but it was still important. And why would the Hillary people vote for, why would you get three Hillary people voting for Colin Powell of all people? Well, here's the thing. The Electoral College, they met in their various states. They met on a state-by-state basis on December 19th. So they're supposed to meet, I think is it the first Monday after the second Wednesday of December, something like that. And so it's the middle of December that they meet and they cast their votes. And then the votes, it's public. You can find on YouTube, this voting process on a state-by-state basis. So the results were known, but they still have to be officially counted in Congress. And here's the really interesting part. So Congress, they count the votes typically on January 6th. Now, if January 6th is going to fall on a Saturday or Sunday, it can get moved up. So sometimes it's January 4th, and I'm not sure what day of the week it's supposed to be, but typically it's January 6th. I don't know what day of the week January 6th is going to be in 2021. So you'll have the new session of Congress. These will be people who are, you know, because the Congress is going to get sworn in probably January 3rd or something. So the new Congress has just been sworn in, and they are going to count the electoral votes. And this was a very interesting thing that happened, and I wasn't on RBN yet, but National Bugle Radio did cover the counting of the electoral votes. It wasn't exactly live streamed, but myself and Professor Sloan listened to it live and then put up the YouTube video within an hour or two. It was very interesting. So they're going to count the votes, and the outgoing vice president presides. He is the vice president is the head of the Senate. There's going to be a joint session of the House of Representatives and the Senate to do the vote counting, and the presiding officer is the vice president. So last time it was Joe Biden presided over it. Al Gore presided over his own disputed election, and Richard Nixon in 1960 likewise presided over the counting of the votes in his disputed election. So you'll have Mike Pence, who will be presiding over this. Now, what is very, very likely to happen, especially if Donald Trump seems to have the majority of the electoral votes, as he did in 2016, is you're going to have objections. Objections will be raised. Now, in 2017, January 2017, when they were counting the 2016 election, you had objections raised based on all sorts of things, but, you know, based on Russian hacking the election, Russian interference in the election. That was often cited. Many, you know, even clear-cut landslide victories in places like Alabama, even those votes, electoral votes, were being challenged. Many of the challengers, all the challengers in 2017, they were all from the House of Representatives. Many black congressional caucus people, so Barbara Lee and Sheila Jackson Lee and these types of people were doing the objections. Also, you had some Jews. You had Jamie Raskin, who had only just been sworn into office about 3 days earlier. He represents Maryland. He wears a yarmulke. So you're having, they were raising objections based on, I think some were based on voter suppression. Others were based on Russian hacking of the election. And they would object. The thing is, for the objection then to be entertained, there has to be a senator, at least one senator. You have to have at least one House member and at least one senator sign on to this written objection. The objection has to be written up and has to be signed by a House member and a senator. And they had tried to enlist senators. They worked really hard on trying to enlist Cory Booker. Cory Booker didn't go along. No senators went along. So none of the objections could be entertained, and Joe Biden overruled them all. Now, I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think you would be able to get a senator, right? I think lots of senators would be willing to jump in and challenge the electoral votes for Donald Trump. And then what would happen? Well, then the House and the Senate have to retire on a state-by-state basis. As soon as, you know, if it happens for Alabama, they have to adjourn, go back to their respective chambers, and then there will be debate. I think it's going to be a half hour. Each side gets a half hour or an hour, something like that, and then they have to come back. The whole process probably takes 90 minutes. If the two sides agree on the objection, then those votes aren't going to count. So who knows what could happen? Now, you could have Donald Trump winning the Electoral College, apparently, but let's just say the Democrats capture the Senate. You could have all of those electoral votes challenged and nullified by Congress. Sounds implausible? Well, how about shutting down the whole economy? I'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extend your life with
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispicos, 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back to the show. So, there are a lot of things that could happen with this presidential election and the Electoral College. And in particular right now, I'm focusing on the counting of the electoral votes on January 6th. Because there's a lot that could happen. There's other things that could happen. I'm just going to throw out a few because there's not that much time left. But the you could have a situation where, especially if a given state, it's close. Let's just say that there's a recount or something. If you look back to 2000 in Florida, this didn't happen, but it almost happened. Remember, in Florida, they they were counting the votes, and there was a deadline coming up because the votes need to be certified a week before the Electoral College meets, this and that, and the Supreme Court was getting involved. The Florida legislature had come into session, and they were poised. It was a Republican-controlled legislature, and they were on the brink. They were poised to change the law and appoint and have the electors appointed by the state legislature, which they had every right to do. They were about to do that. The only reason they didn't do it, because they were about to, because the Florida Supreme Court, which was controlled by Democrats, was about to, they were about to insist on this counting process, this recount that seemed possibly or even likely to favor Gore, that would give Gore the those electoral votes. If the recount continued, the U.S. Supreme Court stopped the recount for a number of days, and then allowed it to. Then they said, "Well, the recount actually would be constitutional, but now it's too late because we're a week before the certification process and this and that." And so, effectively, the Supreme Court halted the recount process and ensured that those electoral votes would go to Bush. And that removed the need for the Florida state legislature to change the law. But the legislature was on the verge of appointing electors on its own. Had they done that, had the Supreme Court not gotten involved and the recount had continued, and the recount had counted that, well, Bush, that Gore won the election, and those electors, the Gore electors, were elected. But the legislature had changed the law. You might have had two different sets of electors, electoral votes being sent to Congress, and this could happen, especially in states where you have, like Michigan, I think, and Pennsylvania, I think, where you have Democratic governors and Republican legislatures. So you could have a Republican legislature that might change a law, and a Republican governor or a Democratic governor who certifies the rival electoral votes. You could have two slates of electoral votes, and you've had this. You had this before. This was a big issue in the Joseph Tilden Rutherford B. Hayes election of 1876. You had rival slates of electoral votes being sent to Congress. So this could happen, and if you had rival sets of electoral votes, then you'd have a challenge, and the two houses of Congress would retire to their chambers and try to figure it out. And the whole thing could be a mess. And my final words here, just because the Congress would certify one person or another, is the mob in the street going to accept it? And if the mob in the street doesn't accept it, then you get your color revolution. I hope you found this interesting. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Radio. ないように思い出す春の日一人ぽっちのよ。Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.